Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Messages about immigration coming from the White House are making the Latino community in the Roaring Fork Valley nervous. A gathering organized by the Glenwood Post-Independent earlier this week brought together community leaders to hear each other's perspectives on the issue. Some talked about policy, others about quelling fears.
If people's ears were open, I think they heard that immigrants truly live with some serious daily anxiety.
Everyone agreed that the ball is in Congress's court. What I didn't really see necessarily was a ton of forward movement on what can happen locally.
I think it's very important for our community, for any community, to talk about these topics and to do it personally, face to face.
I now turn to my guest to discuss immigration in the Roaring Fork Valley. Thank you for joining me in the studio. I've got Samuel Bernal. He is the, what is your title?
I'm in charge of the Radio Tricolor.
Okay. I've got Wyatt Orme. He is our reporter that covers Basalt, Carbondale, Glenwood Springs, Garfield County, and everything in between. And Randy Essex. He is the editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent on Skype from his office at the GPI. Thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here.
So, Randy, you your newspaper held a forum, and this topic was this week on immigration. And it seemed like it was a pretty spirited debate and conversation with some good community partners and leaders in the community there. So I wanted to just ask all three of you, you were all there, what did you take from that forum?
Take a great experience. First, I want to thank the Post-Independent for this initiative because I think it's very important for our community, for any community, to talk about these topics and to do it personally, face-to-face. So I think it was a great moment. Most of the people, I think, was very pro-immigrant in the forum, like it happens in, I think, in all the country. Like, I have that perception that even people in other countries thinks United States is a racist country. What I have been living here, it's the opposite. Most of the people is very friendly, it's very pro-immigrant, and that's what you see when, for example, in this forum, yeah, maybe you could see someone who was not, who didn't agree with immigrants, but most of the people was very friendly with the fact that it's important to have immigrants in our community too.
Mm-hmm. And Randy, what was the impetus for you to decide to do the Common Ground Forum this week on Tuesday on immigration?
The scheduling is coincidental.
Okay.
I'm having one of these every quarter and we'll continue on next year and hope to increase the frequency. But what I'm trying to do is to create dialogue locally about the issues that are most important to us in this region. And clearly, immigration is one of those issues. And I think that, you know, you called it a debate. It's not really designed to be that. The title of it, Common Ground, is meant in the polarized political environment that we're in general. I think that when people sit down face to face rather than through social media or watching their favorite TV station or whatever, that it's much easier to get to a point of understanding. And I guess I think that the most important thing that happened was that people heard each other. If people's ears were open, I think they heard that immigrants truly live with some serious daily anxiety. I think they heard business people who identify as Republicans say that we need immigrants here. And I think we heard institutions like CMC talk about ways that they're trying to be inclusive.
And Wyatt?
Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to everything. I thought that it was interesting. There seemed to be broad consensus that the immigration system was broken. Everyone agreed that, you know, the ball is in Congress's court. What I didn't really see necessarily was a ton of forward movement on what can happen locally, what can happen in Garfield County in order to improve the situation. There seemed to be some disagreement on what exactly the situation is for immigrants in Garfield County. And so, I think on a national level, there was consensus, but locally it seemed maybe a little still murky.
Yeah, there was a comment, I think, made by one of the people that was on the panel about the fact that, you know, the system is broken and Garfield County isn't doing anything about it. What can Garfield County do to affect any sort of change or solution?
One thing we can do is listen to each other. I think that's really important. One thing we can do is sit down together and be inclusive and greet each other as if we are neighbors, which we are. I felt really good about the mix of people. In terms of policy, we heard Tom Jankowski say, and I don't think anybody in the room was surprised, that Garfield County is not going to become a sanctuary or not identify itself as such.
Garfield County Commissioner, right?
Yeah, Tom is a Garfield County Commissioner. We did hear the schools, Rob Stein with the Roaring Fork School District and Richard Gonzalez, who's the chief legal counsel for Colorado Mountain College, say that we're open institutions regardless of immigration status. We welcome people. Schools are a safe place. And in terms of policy, there is one thing that Colorado can do, and it came up rather lightly, and that is make driver's licenses. State law says that people who are here illegally can get a driver's license if they can show residency and meet a number of other conditions. And the state has limited the availability of those licenses. There's a tremendous backlog, and part of what came up, you know, the Mark Gould talking about, imagine that you had a warrant out for you every day. Well, if somebody's here illegally, in a sense, they live with that feeling. And county sheriffs around the state, police chiefs around the state, were in support of this driver's license law, but legislative Republicans have choked it down so that it is available only in limited places. They defeated an effort by the Division of Motor Vehicles to make them more widely available, including in Glenwood Springs. That's something that you could do, where somebody can have a driver's license, so if they get pulled over, they have something that they can give the law enforcement officer. They can buy insurance. They can show proof of insurance. Law enforcement thinks that makes them less likely to run, which is a danger to us all, including law enforcement, everybody on the road. There are things that people can push for locally. That's one.
Randy, that's a good point. Samuel, have you had that conversation among people you've talked to?
Yes. Something that Randy mentioned that I think it's very, very important is absolutely the driver licenses. I think that's the least we can do for the immigrant community, to have something that they can ID, because they're like invisible all the time and they feel this fear. And I see with all our community that they don't know. Sometimes they get to the stores and they're like, hey, can I buy an international driver license? But they are not valid here, but they want to show to the authority who they are. And I think psychologically and practically, that's very difficult to be. Imagine you're in a place that you cannot say, this is me, and I'm doing the things in the right way. So the least we could do is, yes, to push to get more driver license. I don't know legally if it's something that the county can push to. I don't know exactly how it works, but if in some way they can do something about it, is something absolutely that we should be pushing to get more driver license. I don't know, for example, if a county could be able to make an ID that at least could be valid for that county. That would be great too, but I don't know if it's legally allowed. But yeah, people need to ID in a way that is dignifying for them.
That was Samuel Bernal, who runs Radio Tricolor in Basalt. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin, and you're listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We now continue our conversation about immigration with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, and Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio's reporter who covers Latino issues.
I think we will need a lawyer to talk about exactly what does a sanctuary city mean, what changes when they become sanctuary. Because, for example, what happened in Pickens County, I think it was not even sanctuary. It was called like a welcome immigrant city, which is fine because it's like a goodwill statement.
Sure.
That's what I kind of
symbolic.
Feel. Like. Exactly. It's very symbolic. But at the end, everybody talks about sanctuary cities, but we don't know exactly what are the legal implications about it. And so sometimes I see that debate about, hey, why you don't become a sanctuary city? And in this case, for example, Tom, he had some valid point. Like, I mean, you understand their part too. Like, we need to follow some rules. And there are also rumors, because I haven't seen the numbers, but that when you become a sanctuary city or when you become rebel against the Federation, maybe they get harder with you. And if at the end of the day they want to protect their people, maybe if they name themselves sanctuary, maybe they are affecting them. So it's complicated.
Right. Wyatt?
Yeah, I do agree that it's complicated. I mean, when you try and find this a kind of exact definition of what a sanctuary city is, there really isn't one. They are to some degree don't comply with federal immigration authorities, but Lou Valario, the Garfield County Sheriff, was very clear. We don't ask about people's immigration status. We don't hold undocumented people if they've been put in jail for longer so that ICE can come pick them up, ICE being the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. And so in many ways, it sounds like Garfield County, you know, has limited their cooperation with ICE in ways that, you know, even Pickens County has. That said, the Justice Department did send Pickens County a letter saying we are withholding some of your funding because of your pro-immigrant stance. So I think that there is something to be said for taking a stand, even a symbolic stand on an issue. And the Justice Department, you know, is withholding funding. But it was interesting. One of the panelists, a young man who's undocumented but who has DACA. Junior Ortega. Yeah, he was saying, you know, I would feel much more comfortable going and paying a traffic violation in Pickens County than I would in Garfield County.
Because ICE agents are casing the courthouse.
There are rumors of that,
right.
Yeah.
Is there any reason to think they don't do that in Pickens County?
Well, we haven't seen them hanging around, but that doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Right, but, I mean, Lou did make the point that a courthouse is a public building and you can't exactly, you know, keep somebody out. I think that Junior's comment, that goes to the heart of something, and it goes to the you know, Tom Jankowski said, there's not going to be a massive immigration crackdown.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rob Stein, who is, and Tom Jankowski is around immigrants every day too. Rob Stein is around young people in the schools, who probably are more susceptible to this fear. And, you know, I think Tom said that and believes that. He is he's a conservative Republican, but he just doesn't believe that Donald Trump is going to act on his rhetoric or that somehow there are checks in place that will prevent that from happening. Rob Stein evoked the Holocaust, and he's the superintendent of the Roy Poor Schools, and said, he suggested that in Germany, before before it was obvious what was happening, that people had that attitude that, oh, it's not going to be that bad. It's really not going to happen. And I think one of my big takeaways from the evening was that the fear is real. If you listen to the rhetoric that we've listened to for, 2 years now, and if you read some of the letters to the editor and the Facebook comments and so forth, and you would be the target of that, it's hard. I get it. It's really hard to shrug it off and say, oh, that's not going to happen.
But it could. It easily could. Mm-hmm. Do we have any idea what the percentage of Latino immigrants is here?
In Garfield County, it's 28%. Those are the last numbers. And in the census, the 2010, it was about one third of the population.
And do we know in public schools?
The Roaring Fork School District and in the Western Garfield County school districts, it's over 50% of the kids. Wow. In Aspen, it's 11%.
Wow. Okay. And that could explain the complete opposite polar views of Garfield County and Pickens County and so many different policies that they have, including immigration,
and
in my opinion.
We suspect it has to do with funds, too. For example, we know that Pickens County wouldn't suffer a lot if those funds were taken away in the federal side, but Garfield County will... will suffer a lot. Yeah, it's a suspicion, you know, because at the end it has to do also with political views, but it's another piece on the table.
Sure. And of course, you know, that 28%, I mean, that's that one would have to reason that 28% of our economy, our workforce, is contributing to that, to our valley. I mean, that's a huge piece.
Right. That was one thing. Yeah, that was one thing that I took away from the forum, was just that, you know, unequivocally, we need these immigrants to fill jobs here. There would be jobs that would be left totally vacant without these people.
Yeah.
Randy, were you going to say something?
We just did a story on Labor Day on this point, and Jankowski said that immigrants account for roughly a quarter of our economy.
That was Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now continue our conversation about immigration in the Roaring Fork Valley with Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio's reporter who focuses on Latino issues, and Samuel Bernal, who runs Radio Tricolor in Fiscal.
You know, we think about the jobs, but you have to think about the spending, too. And how many businesses would have a hard time without some of that additional spending? You know, gas stations, convenience stores, restaurants, all kinds of shops, Target. You know, you think about a quarter of the workforce and the ripple effect that that has through the economy. That would be very large for both of the counties that we're talking about here.
Randy, who was on the panel?
You're asking to remember off the top of my head. We had Richard Gonzalez, who's the chief legal counsel for CMC. We had Junior Ortega, who works for the county and is a DACA recipient. We had Yesenia Areola, who is a naturalized citizen, who's been an activist, whose husband at one point was stuck in Mexico on a visa issue. We had Rob Stein, who's the superintendent of the Roaring Fork School District. We had Samuel. We had Tom Jankowski, the Garfield County Commissioner. We had Mark Gould, who owns Gould Construction, a big employer here. And we had Sheriff Lou Valario.
The three of you were in the room. What did you not get to that you wanted to? Samuel, was there anything that didn't get enough conversation or...
Yeah,
discussion?
Maybe the point that we're talking about, the sanctuary cities, that is very complicated, and I don't blame the Garfield County for not getting one, because I understand that it's not as easy as that, and maybe in that way, maybe they are getting more protection for the people. We need to go more to the facts For example, yeah, there are the rumors that people, when they go to court, they get detained by, they get arrested by ICE outside, and we know from some stories that it's happening. But what we don't know is what kind of people they are arresting. If it's always someone who really needed to be arrested because of their records, or if it's someone who just was paying a ticket for a stop sign or something like that. So, but we don't really have the information for that.
Mm-hmm. Wyatt,
I agree with both of Samuel's points. I also thought that there was something that was alluded to, which was, you know, kind of the risk that we have with having this big of a group of our population kind of withdrawing from civic life. And I wanted to hear more discussion about, you know, what are the dangers to our community as a whole when a third of it is, you know, scared to call the police, is scared to, and I'm not saying that entire third, but nonetheless, just the kind of real practical, the practical effects of this fear that in fact kind of like affect all of us when we think about it in broader terms.
Mm-hmm. And you see that within the community?
Yes. For example, there was an accident months ago in Glenwood that it was a hit and run. It was a Latino immigrant, the one who caused the accident, and the police were looking for them. They asked, they called the station to ask for help to spread the voice about that they were looking for this person. And there were people who knew him, but they were afraid to call the police directly because they didn't know if, you know, they could be deported because they were talking with the police. So in that case, we were like intermediate, like they will give us information and then we will give the information to the police so they could, you know, they could get that person. But you see that fear in the people, that they are afraid, of course, to call the police. They are afraid. And when there is a rumor about the raid, they don't want, sometimes they don't even want to go to work because they're like, oh, there is a raid. And sometimes it's a rumor, but I mean,
but ICE has made arrests. Yeah, yes. I mean, there has been activity.
They have been doing arrests, and people get afraid, and you understand that because we have got also some suspicion that there could be some collateral arrest, right? Like, and actually there are some numbers by some organizations that a lot of them are collateral arrest. I mean, people who were there, they were not going after them, but they were there and they take them too. So,
wow. Mm-hmm. Right. And do you think that this 2 years ago or 3 years ago, was there still this type of fear happening?
I think the presidential speech is very important for every nation, you know, and at the end of the day, it's the leader of the nation, is the first representative of a nation. And when that speech is not polite and it's not respectful, of course, everybody gets that feeling. And as Randy said, you can see in the comments of the people, kind of comments that you were not reading 3 years ago. It's like some of these people needed some endorsement to be mean to other ones. And that's the problem with this administration.
Mm-hmm. Randy, that exchange between Tom Jankowski and Rob Stein, did that surprise you? Was that a very long back and forth about mass deportation and the comparison of the Holocaust?
It wasn't a long back and forth. What Tom said didn't surprise me that he would say that. The emotion of Rob's response, I didn't expect. I didn't know that about his family. What was it? His
stepfather.
Stepfather.
Yeah.
You know, I think he is very close to the fear that people feel. I would say, too, that, you know, they were talking after the event, so it wasn't like an angry exchange. They openly expressed their opinions, which is great.
Which is the whole point, right, of having these forums. Wyatt?
Can I go back to Samuel's point earlier just about how, you know, I think that I agree that the rhetoric is one thing, but we should say that, you know, the Obama administration deported more people than previously before. Obama was nicknamed by some immigrant advocates groups as the deporter in chief. So, you know, people that I've spoken with, Sophia Clark, for example, who works for CIRC, the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, you know, she says from her work, you know, this fear has been there for a long time. But the question now is that ICE is kind of more of a loose cannon than ever.
And every time there is an association with the Nazi, and people like, is it really going to get very, very, very ugly? We hope it doesn't get, but there is this fear like it could be a massive deportation. Just last month there was I think it was The Guardian that supposedly got a report about there was going to be a big mass deportation second half of September, right? So the rumor starts spreading, and then at the end, it looks like there was nothing like that. Maybe because of the hurricane, we don't know. But right. There is this fear all the time in the air that there will be something big.
Right. Yeah, and there was somebody had asked, you know, why local counties can't do something about this and address this issue. And I think that most people feel that way, right? So you can go to these forums, and hopefully they get educated a little bit about how local jurisdictions their hands are tied to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think local jurisdictions' hands are tied to a certain extent, but I don't think that we should underestimate the power of, you know, kind of the symbol of kind of saying, you know, we're here, we are a welcoming community. I mean, you know, ICE is a federal agency. They have legal responsibilities, and local law enforcement has to comply with them to a certain extent. But, you know, at the same time, there are politics involved. And I think I don't think we should underestimate the importance, or at least the power that can have with local governments kind of saying, you know, we're here for our community members, documented or undocumented.
Randy, were there any conclusions or steps forward that were discussed?
Steps forward for me, immigration is one of the most important issues here, in my opinion. It's a third of our population. It's at least a quarter of our economy. And we started with the Aspen Times, an occasional series of stories about immigrants. We wrote a Labor Day story just looking at the jobs immigrants do and some of that economic impact. And that's going to be a continued series where we'll look at different aspects of life here. I want to continue this discussion on the pages and in public. You know, we may well have another immigration forum, perhaps on a more discreet topic. This one was pretty general, next year. And I'll partner with CMC, with Samwell, with Aspen Public Radio, with anybody to promote a respectful and inclusive environment for everybody who lives here.
And I mean, it seemed to me that there were definitely people there who were, you know, were probably kind of more hardline, wanted to close borders, you know, but they were there and they were listening, and, you know, people were sharing some really kind of sensitive, vulnerable stories about themselves. And I thought that was cool that, you know, everyone was sitting there, everyone was listening, and people were sharing their stories and being really open.
I think we need a lot of information. You know, the more you know about something, is the less fearful you are about it.
On that note, I'll end it. So thank you very much for coming in and taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was Samuel Bernal, who runs Radio Tricolor, Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, and Wyatt Orm, a reporter for Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, host of Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.